Good evening, everybody. This is James McCanny with my Science Hour, September 19th, 2019. And tonight's main science topic, a little further in the show, on batteries. So I'm going to dive into the topic of batteries and where we are today and what batteries, for example, I use with the wing generator and why. And some people might think, well, that's not new modern technology. Well, I'll tell you something. Listen and find out why I don't use the newest fandangle battery system on the planet. There are good reasons for not using it. But first, I'm going to talk about there's a plane, the biggest plane in the world, called the Stratocruiser, which was originally funded by Richard Branson. In the process, now let me just go through a little history here to bring you up to date if you're not familiar with this. The Strato Launcher is a giant airplane. I think, I don't know how many jet engines, four Boeing 747 jet engines, and its purpose is to carry a payload that's meant for outer space. And what happens is, going back to the original Burt Rutan design, the Spaceship One, if you remember that one, the XPRIZE, the Ansari XPRIZE, $10 million, as they called them, and to go into space two times within a seven-day period with the same spacecraft carrying three people each time. Although they modified that last rule, just they said they could take one real passenger and two bags of sand, the equivalent weight of two other passengers, just, you know, in case there was an accident, there was no reason to push the limit and have three people die if only one had to die. So they, for safety reasons, they allowed the two bags of sand instead of two real people. But at any rate, that used Burt Rutan's airplane is called the White Knight, and what that was, a carrier vehicle. In fact, he leased that out to the military, to NASA, to other groups, and also used it for his own experimentation on designs, because when you have an aircraft design, you can put it in a wind tunnel, you can do all kinds of other things, you can get some estimates, but until you get it off the ground and actually moving in space and in crosswinds and all kinds of other conditions, you really don't know what that thing's going to do. So that's what the White Knight was for, is to take experimental vehicles up to about 50,000 foot altitude, drop it off, and then let that vehicle do its thing. And, of course, the whole basis of the XPRIZE, the Ansari XPRIZE winning, was the Burt Rutan design, where they took the Spaceship One, a little three-man, kind of like little mini space shuttle, looked like a water drop, up to 50,000 feet. Then that, they would drop it off, and that thing had a single engine in the back and some control rudder systems, which were very simple. It would go vertical for out to 60 miles above the Earth's surface and then come back down, glide down, and then make a runway landing, which it did. So they won the Ansari X Prize, which really nobody thought they would do. So then they thought, okay, well, that's a good idea. So they went to the next size, which was a bigger version of the White Knight. And then along, they needed some serious money, so a guy named Paul Allen stepped in and funded the Strato Launcher, which is the big version of the design of this type of runway to space launch system. And I said, when they were doing this, I said, this won't work. The plane is too big. It's like, I understand things scaling and how to scale things. And this airplane was just unwieldy. You have problems in also the way the wheels were set up on it when it came in for a landing. And they, in fact, had problems. I'll talk a little bit about those technical issues when they flew it once here recently, a couple months ago. I probably mentioned that on my show. But they had a very tough time landing this thing. Taking off is one thing, but landing it is a whole nother ballgame. because of crosswinds. Even the slightest crosswind, this big plane cannot manage. But anyway, because it's lightweight, it's, for its size, it's very lightweight. So anyway, this past week, let me go back a year ago, Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft with Bill Gates, multi-billionaire's final value at age of death, about $16 billion. And, I from what I understand, he didn't take it with him. But anyway, be that as it may, he was the one who then came and put the money into the Strato launcher. And so his heirs, Paul Allen's heirs, pulled the money out of the Strato launcher investment. And I'm not sure how they could do that, but who knows in today's legal world. It was probably a timed funding type of thing. And rather than have their inheritance burned up in some kind of big space ship launching thing, the heirs pulled the money back. So I'm not going to go into all of that deal. But anyway, be that as it may, the Strato launcher is now in mothballs. But, okay, so that's one issue. But I want to talk about the design flaws in the Strato launcher. It's too big. You have to be careful when you make things really, really big because they're just things that change. And I deal with this every day. I deal with this on a daily basis with the wing generator because I'm going to be making these really big. But there again, when you have big things don't act the same as little things, although they look the same. Okay. But anyway, here's the issue with the Strato launcher. Taking off is one thing, but then taking off with a payload is another thing. So the maiden flight, which they had here a short while ago, they took off without a payload. So a lot of the balance or ballast of a ship like this, like an aircraft, is in its in the weight down in the center. And if you're familiar with, say, airliners, big airliners, the big jets that carry 300 passengers, etc., when they take off, they have a big load of gasoline. It's right in the belly underneath the passengers. There are some wing tanks, but the majority of that weight is down in the tanks underneath the space underneath the aircraft. And they can't just come around and land again. They're given enough fuel so they can get to their next stop plus some extra. But when they land, you do not want that plane full of fuel. It's a lot of weight. So you have to minimize the amount of weight that the jet has when it comes in for landing. In fact, a jet will have pumps in it, and if there's, say, an emergency landing, they got to unload that fuel before they try and come in and land. Because, just imagine, a big volume of liquid weight right in the middle of the plane. That's a lot of extra weight, so the plane has to dump that before it lands. Okay, so anyway, this is a whole aspect of aircraft design. Is the fuel and where the fuel is placed and the ballast, etc. But with a Strato launcher, you have an extra vehicle that's plugged up on the bottom underside. And when it comes in for a landing, it's designed to land without that payload. So this creates another issue. What if you get this thing launched, and you get up to, let's say, 5,000 feet, and there's some kind of issue with the Strato launcher itself. An engine goes out, which creates a torque on the wing system, etc. Or there could be a number of other issues. What if that thing has to come back and land? Well, you got to drop the payload. And they may have it designed where it could possibly land with a payload. But that's one of the issues. But say it gets up to a successful altitude, 40 to 50,000 feet, drops its payload, and then comes in for landing. And here's what happened. If you look at the videos of the Strato launcher coming in to land, they only show it coming in once where it actually landed. but it came around and around and around again. I knew some people that were actually there, and some people took videos, but they said this thing came around many, many times, and finally it had to land because it was running out of fuel. So they had to bring this baby in for a landing, but and I don't know if you've ever seen big jets on a runway coming in. They come in kind of sideways if there's a crosswind. They come in kind of sideways, and then if you're on that plane, you get really jerked around. There's a big impulse when you hit the ground because you've got to take a plane that big that's coming in sideways and a little bit off a direct line with the runway and right it so that it's in line with the runway. So it typically bounces once. The pilot tries to use the rudders and the ailerons, etc., to bring it straight after it bounces the first time. Then you come down, and then they put on the reverse engines and try and slow this thing down. But the Strato launcher has wheels that are spaced, much different. If you notice on a big aircraft, a big airliner, the wheels are all together. And so when they touch down, there's not a lot of torque due to the wheels. They minimize that by keeping the wheels together. And so the old planes used to have the wheels out on the wings, but now you'll notice they have them mainly underneath, and that's to minimize that torque when they hit the ground a little off, you know, a little ski-waggy to the side, a little off center. There's not that much torque on the wheels. But the Strato launcher's wheel system is a bad design. The wheels are out on the outside pods. So anyway, they had a lot of trouble landing that thing. And it's a long runway vehicle also. So anyway, there are some physical problems with having something that big. And I'll just make a quick comment. I have personal designs for a runway-to-space launch system. In it, I'll tell you, it looks really, really different, and it's really it does not have those design issues. Okay, so just a comment on that. That's something in the news this past week, that the heirs of the Paul Allen fortune have dropped the Strato launcher investment. Okay, a quick comment now. I see disinformation coming out of many sources. And I see a lot of good information on these sources, but I'm going to mention two that I saw recently, and I talked about one of them last week. But the first one I want to talk to came out of an online journal that's called Veterans Today. And they were praising, I couldn't believe this, they had a guy who was a nuclear physicist, claimed he was, you know, famous, and check this out. But this guy, Kesh, spelled K-E-S-H-E, has been around for years, claiming he has some kind of energy from the vacuum of the infinite universe product, and they've never produced a product. There are claims that people go in and see this, and they go, oh, it works. But I've never seen such a claim. There's people who go, oh, yeah, lots of people have gone in and verified this. And there's nothing that this guy has done with any visible proof at all. It's a giant hoax. It looks like a little It literally looks like a Coca-Cola can with two wires coming out of it. He says you can plug this into the cigarette lighter on your car and power your car, which is ridiculous because you can't get that much power through those two little teeny wires. To power your car. I mean, the whole thing is bogus. And to imagine that the little teeny wires that come up to your cigarette lighter in your car are sufficient to somehow run current through to power your car is once again ridiculous. So, but why is Veterans Today pushing this article that's totally, totally bogus? And I'll tell you a little story. As the history of, I had some investors one time, they're from Canada, and we were fairly long in an investment, and I'm not going to go into any more detail. But one day the guy calls up, and we were, you know, getting ready to formalize using factories, etc. for one of my inventions. And we're all ready. And the guy calls me up and he says, you know, I'm taking all my money. I'm putting it into cash. And I go, oh, my God, you can't be kidding me. You know, this is absurd. And this guy was serious. And, of course, he lost all his money. But anyway, this cash story, why would veterans today risk their credibility by publishing this article? There again, there's a internet rag called USA Watchdog. Okay, well, a week ago they ran an article on Dane Wigington, who is what I call the boy band of geoengineering. And I've gone into this before in a show, so I'm not going to repeat it here. I believe I talked about that last week. What's a boy band? A boy band is a constructed entity that gets a lot of promotion, a lot of professional backing, and mainly promotion to go out there and put a glossy image, but really does not have substance in the way of, say, true talent or whatever. Okay, so anyway, why would Watchdog, USA Watchdog, put up an article to damage its credibility and then defend that with basically a big huff, but no real information that would allow them to defend their position? So this is what I'm seeing, and I see a lot of these, like Veterans Today. You would think that would be a journal that you could trust, but you really got to watch it. The disinformation out there is thick and heavy. Here's an article. The one station I do like, it's called RTE-TV, and I've been invited to be on there a number of times, and to date I have not been on there. The last time I was invited to be on there was to talk about the 50th anniversary of the alleged Apollo landing, and I declined. That's something that's not going to benefit me. At the same time, I was contacted by a group of journalists from Russia to be on Russian television on that same topic, and I declined. I've been on Russian TV before, had very good reception from the people. I've been on Japanese television. I've been on Canadian television, but when it comes to topics like that, that does not do anything good for me, doesn't benefit me or what I'm doing. So anyway, I decline. But anyway, a very good article came out from RTE-TV this past week on Germany's Green New Deal. Now, if you want to see what happens to a country that goes headlong into the Green New Deal and open borders, look at Germany. Germany was a hallmark country in the world, a small country in Central Europe that, of course, was recovering from World War II in a big way. But industrial-wise, if you wanted good engineering, if you wanted good products, top-of-the-line products, and you had to pay more for them, but they were, you know, when you bought a German-made product, it was for real. It was very good. So a person named Angela Merkel has been pumping up the New World Order climate change fear porn, and she's still doing this. And, of course, the companies, here's the end result. This is the Green New Deal, where they have put in vast amounts of three-blade wind turbines. And they don't work. So they've relied on three-blade wind turbines, and now their cost of electricity is going through the roof because they're saying what they're doing is they're shutting down standard power plants, nuclear and coal, and I don't agree with nuclear at all. Germany, percentage-wise, had a far greater investment in nuclear, as does France, than the United States. The United States had a lot of coal. They continued to burn coal, but now the United States is shutting down coal plants. Big, big mistake, even though I don't agree with pollution, I don't agree with coal at all. But in terms of weaning the country off of standard energy, see what happened to Germany. They allowed just countless open border refugees into their country. They have a super high crime rate. Women cannot walk down the street without being raped. Their industry leaders are fleeing to China. This is like the Obama era. Everybody leaving, companies leaving to China. The unemployment lines are growing. You cannot find a good produced German product anymore. They're all made in China. And here's the catch. They're forcing the automobile companies, Volkswagen, other major auto producers in Germany, to market electric cars. But they're not ramped up to build and mass produce electric cars yet. So they're a loss. So the automobiles industry is taking a loss. They're producing electric cars. The electric cars are being charged from coal plants, basically. And on a day where there's no wind, their industry shut down, including the auto industry, which is very electric, dependent on electricity. But here's the ultimate catch. Just this past week, Germany did not have enough electrical energy to meet its energy needs because they've been shutting down with these Green New Deal proclamations of being energy independent on renewables, and they had to import energy to fuel their energy needs. They ended up paying 38,000 euros per megawatt of power. Now, for those of you that don't have a feeling for commercial power, that's about 3,000 times the going rate for electrical energy. Now, imagine your electric bill on a nationwide level going up 3,000 times in a single day. It's beyond belief, but Merkel is up there. We gotta do something because of climate change. It's the end of the world, you know, and the whole thing is so messed up. The whole thing is so messed up. You have, on one hand, the energy, alternative energy, and that's why, by the way, I have a chapter in my book, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project. One of the chapters is the myth of alternative energy. And it's the failure of the three-blade wind turbine and solar, okay? And so here's what you're going to have in the United States with the Green New Deal. You're going to have a huge investment in stuff that doesn't work, that has a 10-year lifespan, solar and three-blade wind turbines, 10 years at best. Okay, so your $10 trillion or $20 trillion investment is going to be worthless in 10 years, and you're not going to get a dime of electricity out of it. Your energy bills are going to go up and your industries are going to fail because of lack of energy. That's what's going to happen. Plus, your women will not be able to walk down the street without being raped. And there again, it's illegal in Germany to talk about the rape issue with women, as it is in California. So that's what you're going to get, folks. But this is what's going on in Germany today. Yeah, it's not a pretty sight. That's the Green New Deal, German style. Here's a little segue. I don't talk about much about health anymore. I used to talk about health almost every week on my show. But I noticed this going into a store, and like everybody, I buy soap, I buy shampoo, you know, occasional skin cream product or things like that. And I'll be honest with you, what I use put on my face, I'm in the sun a lot, I'm outside, I use coconut oil, strictly. I don't use the stuff you buy in the store. It's like in a fancy tube, and then you pay a lot of money with a G rating, or what do you call it, a solar rating for like 50 or 100 or something that supposedly blocks ultraviolet radiation. I don't believe that in that stuff because basically if you're in the sun, you're putting a chemical into your skin and then baking your skin with it. I don't know. It's not a good idea in my book. But the point of this topic here is that if you look on a bottle of shampoo, and this is for regular products, I don't care if it's like especially women buy a lot of stuff to put on their skin, to make their skin, to take away wrinkles, to, you know, to, you know, make your skin look fresh, or, you know, hand lotion or whatever it is. Anyway, shampoo, whatever it is. Pick up the bottle. I don't care what store you're in, drugstore, you know, big box store, whatever. Pick up the bottle and go to ingredients. And the first ingredient you're going to always see is water. You go, water? Now, understand that the ingredients are in order of percentage of quantity in the product. So when they say water is first, that's the majority of what's in the bottle. Is so you're paying, you know, $4.95 or $10.95 or in some cases $60. I was in a store the other day and a woman had a little booth there and she was like cornering people, and so I stood and listened. And she had people there talking to them about how great this product was, and look at all the long list of all of these essential products that are in this little bottle, and it's so good for you. And I picked it up and I looked, and on the bottom, very well hidden, were the ingredients. And I looked at it and I said, well, the first ingredients are water and glycerin. Now, glycerin is usually the second thing listed, you will see. What is glycerin? It's an alcohol. When mixed with water, it creates a gel. So it takes, you know, say a quart of water, you mix a little bit of glycerin alcohol with it, and it makes a gel. Now you put all of your other products in that base. So when you buy a shampoo or a product or a sunscreen or a hand lotion or whatever it is, look on the ingredients. You're going to see water and glycerin are the first two components in that product. And then you'll probably see listed throughout the list of ingredients the other forms of alcohol. So you're getting a lot of alcohol, which is terrible for your skin. Horrible. And then water, okay. And then probably very far down the list of ingredients, you're going to find the things that they're touting on the front label, and very little bit of it in there. But that's what they're selling. So when you go to buy something, shampoo or whatever, at the store, look at the label and realize that you're paying $4 to $10 or maybe $40, $50, $60 for that jar full of water. That's what you're paying. And so what I tell people is, for the majority of your usage for your skin or whatever, and this is for people of all ages, use coconut oil. And here's some advice. When you buy coconut oil, it should be from coconuts, not the there's a number of different types of coconut oil. You want it from coconuts. You want it to be cold pressed, and you want it to be organic. That's about it, because so organic, cold-pressed coconut oil, you can use it for cooking, you can use it for many different uses for skin. For I used to be in cold climates a lot, and people would ask me, how do you keep your skin and hands from being dry and cracked? Because they would see noticeably that I looked like I just came out of a tropical jungle. I said, I use coconut oil. I saw a young lady one time. She was a receptionist at a place where I went in, and she was a receptionist. She had terrible acne. And I said, you know, I'm going to tell you something. What are you using for your acne? And she had a thing there. It was like, you know, she paid a lot of money for it, was to dry her skin out, and she thought she had to dry her skin out to get rid of the acne. Her skin looked terrible. It was all dry, little white cakes around all of the like acne marks, etc. And I said, use coconut oil. And she said, I can't put oil in my face. I already have too much oil. I said, no, use coconut oil. Start putting it on, and in 2 weeks, you're going to realize that it's going to open up and allow your skin to drain all that oil out. And so she was pretty skeptical, and I said, just go do it. And then a couple weeks later, I went into the same office, and I went in there, and she said, I can't believe it. She said, I used coconut oil and my face is clearing up, and I could see a noticeable difference in her face. Coconut oil. You can buy it in quantity. You can buy it online. You can buy it in a lot of stores now. But like I say, get organic, cold-pressed coconut oil and use it. You can use it for cooking, whatever. Take some, a couple teaspoons a day. If you know somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia or older people, give them coconut, 2 or 3 tablespoons of coconut oil per day. It'll start to rejuvenate those electrical connections in the nervous system. Okay, enough of that. Enough of Dr. Jim today. But coconut oil is an amazing, amazing product and something you should have a couple gallons of it in your house, something you should be using every day. By the way, I don't sell it. I don't have any investment in coconut oil. I'm just telling you because that's some good advice. Free, by the way, commercial-free show. And just a little comment on that same vein. A few weeks ago, I made an announcement on this show. I said, over the summer, my water filter sales have been a little bit slow, and more than a little bit slow. And of course, if I don't say something, people are not going to know. So I thought, well, I'll just announce it on my show. And people have responded. I said that if I don't get my base, my listener base, to buy my water filters, I'm going to have to post on Amazon, which is something I really don't want to do because for a million reasons. But anyway, because I'm very much against Amazon centralizing all the purchases of the world and all the vendors of the world. I want to sell in my own web page, and I want everybody else, I want my competitors to sell on their own web pages. I don't want everybody, all my competitors now sell on Amazon. So it's like I'm off in my little corner of the world, and people are selling inferior products and getting free shipping, you know, et cetera. So anyway, not going to go into all of that, but I made an announcement, and people stepped up to the plate. And, of course, it's fall, so the kids are back in school. Labor Day's over. Everybody's back working. And so people are starting to think about water filters. And so, anyway, if people keep stepping up to the plate and ordering my water filter products, it'll be wonderful because that's what supports this commercial-free show, by the way. And so sorry for inserting a little commercial here, self-promotion. But I have my books, my water filters, and people have been buying my books, joining the paid cast. That's all helps money coming in to support the basic stuff, the web page, the radio show. I pay for my own airtime. I don't have sponsors. I don't have donations, etc. Okay, so enough of that. So please go to my web page, buy water filters. If you're not, if you're stocked up with water filters, tell your friends, etc., and go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, just a comment here on a guy named Warren Buffett. This is a little, I saw an advertisement, tell you where this came from. You know how you're on YouTube, and I hate to say I go to YouTube, but yeah, like everybody, I go there, watch stuff. But there was an advertisement, somebody advertising for how to make millions of dollars by investing or something like that, and they used the example that Warren Buffett, after he was 50 years old, went from $7 million in assets, in net worth or whatever they call it, to $62 billion. And he did it in a very short amount of time. And so they didn't really say how he did it. They just implied that he invested wisely in stocks or something, which is baloney. What Warren Buffett did is he played the concessions of three-blade wind turbine, the government subsidies. This is what he did. And this was a racket. It's a way that him and T. Boone Pickens and other people put a lot of money into three-blade wind turbines. That's why you see them scattered all over the country. These people invested in them to get the basically the profit. It's upfront profit. The subsidies give the investor an upfront profit, and that was the scam. Remember, Obama gave I don't know how many billions to that company that went belly up and, you know, overnight lost all the money. it all was a giant scam. And Warren Buffett, he just, you know, he laughs about it. He went from $7 billion with a B, billion-dollar net worth, in a couple of years to over $62 billion. And in 1 year, he doubled his net worth due to subsidies on three-blade wind turbines. Now, all of those wind turbines are sitting out there. They're not working. They're not producing electricity. Most of them are broken, malfunctioning. And so when you see, you go through, what, Kansas or Iowa or out to the 10 between Phoenix and L.A., San Diego, whatever. When you go on these and you see these vast fields of three-blade wind turbines that are just sitting there, just remember that you paid Warren Buffett billions of dollars to put those there. He walked away with the money and you walked away with the bill and you're not getting any electricity. You're not getting a dime of electricity and nobody's responsible for taking that garbage down. Anyway, a little note, which brings me into the next topic. I'll be talking about batteries relative to alternative energy. That's a topic, main science topic tonight. But I want to lead into this with something that is now, according to the fire department that investigated the, remember the recent boat fire, the divers, 30 of them died on a boat accident and the boat burned up. And all these people died, etc. But now they're making the claim, this is from the report of the investigation, that the fire started from a cell phone that was being charged on the boats. Now, they're very conscious of this now when you get on an airplane. They ask you about cell phones, is your battery in or out of your cell phone, etc. But here's the issue. I'll be talking about properties of batteries. But here's the issue. There's a lot of energy stored in a battery. And if it starts to physically break down internally, okay, all of that energy starts to flow in the battery itself, and that's a lot of energy, and it's going to keep discharging until all of that energy is consumed. And in a small package like a telephone a battery, that can create a fire. It creates a tremendous amount of energy in a short period of time. And so I'll be talking about battery properties. One of those properties is how much energy is expended during the charging process and the discharge process. And that's where the majority of energy is expended in batteries today. But one of the essential properties of a battery is its reliability. If it breaks down internally, what happens to all that energy? Wow, that's an amazing question. And lithium ion, I do not use. Now, I've been tempted to incorporate the wing generator with lithium ion technology. There's a number of companies out there that, not the least of which is Tesla, the Elon Musk company, who have what they call the power cells or the other types of technology, battery technology that you can put in along with alternative energy, whether it's wind or solar or whatever. But in contacting my people in the industry, and this is internationally because I deal with companies internationally, they do not use and will not use lithium ion in a big system. Now, they're getting bigger and bigger systems. And I talked a week or two ago about the Walmart fires. Walmart has told Tesla to get all of its stuff off the Walmart stores because they're causing fires. And so this is one of the issues when you're dealing with low voltage, like solar. Low voltage means big cables, high currents. When you have high currents, you have the risk of fire. If a terminal is not exactly correct, if a bolt or a nut is not tightened down properly, if there's an off balance in the way the wiring is set up, or if you have batteries included, where you're having high transfer of energy from the batteries, et cetera, into the system or into the wiring panel in the building, is all a source for potential fires. And, of course, this is what, by the way, separated the Edison system from the Tesla system. Back in the early 1900s, actually, it was back in the late 1800s, Tesla and Edison were competing for the style of what Edison favored the DC power solution, and Tesla favored AC. And Tesla was a smart guy. He knew what he was doing, as we all know. And he knew that you could transmit electricity for long distances using AC, alternating current, alternating voltages. And he also knew that if you had high voltage AC, it would transmit a long distance, and that you could then use repeaters to use some of that energy to bump up the voltage again. All of these things you could do, whereas DC, you could not do any of these. And the real issue, the real safety issue, was that the Edison system, you had to have basically an energy source every couple hundred feet. And so something absolutely ridiculous. So the end result was that the Tesla system won out. The system we're using today, the transformers, the electrical grid as it is designed today, was around when that was the original Tesla design. We're still using it. And by the way, we do not need a smart grid. A smart grid is simply something to control you, the end user, where they can shut your electric off if you're not a good citizen according to the ranking of the government profiling. That's what it's all about. Because just briefly, what they're selling for a smart grid is it's some kind of protection mechanism against EMP attacks, electromagnetic pulse, in other words, like a nuclear bomb that's set up to give an electric magnetic pulse and take out your electric grid. By the time your smart grid software figures out that a pulse has gone by, it's already gone, and it's already to the next station and the next station, and there's no way you can send a signal to the next station to warn them. So it's a contradiction. The smart grid is a hoax. It is a hoax, and the industry people are all behind it because guess what? They're going to sell a product, and they're going to make a lot of money, just like three-blade wind turbines, just like solar panels. Don't work, but they make a lot of money. Okay. So anyway, the problem with one of the big problems with batteries is its reliability, and what does it do when it breaks down internally? So we don't have these problems, for example, with the carbon-based batteries like the Ever Ready Bunny battery, or the automobile battery, for example, the lead acid batteries. These are, in a sense, really crude battery systems, but they work. They're very heavy, and for the amount of energy that they give off, but the amount of energy they give off is then controlled by other control systems. For example, if you put a AA battery into a flashlight, the light is balanced so you don't have a lot of energy. In other words, there's a design factor so that when you turn on the light. Now, let me just take this to the extreme, as we sometimes do in physics, to give an example. If you take a wire, and this is something you should not do, by the way, just a wire, and you put it around, say, a little AA battery or a flashlight battery, as we call them. If you took a little wire and you just short-circuited that, it would expend all that energy in a flash and probably cause some damage. So that's what happens internally when a battery breaks down internally. It's like short-circuiting it internally. Okay, so That is why I do not and will not use lithium-ion batteries in the wing generator systems that have battery support or that are off-grid. And as I said, on an international basis, I've explored this. I've asked the suppliers. I've looked into this. I wanted to use lithium-ion because the energy density is much better. It's a clean system. They have very advanced battery technology. The number of recycles, the number of times you can recycle them is very good. You can discharge them down to almost nothing, and they recharge. They have a lot of very, very good properties. They're not so good in the cold, however. Where some of my clients will be is in very frigid environments, and lithium ion is not that good in a cold environment. So I need something that's universally good across the temperature spectrum. So anyway, I will just tell you, I use gel batteries exclusively with the wing generator systems. And when you go down the list of all of these properties that a battery should have, gel batteries have them all. And so even though they're being phased out from, in a sense, or they're being overshadowed by other battery technologies, in the long run, gel batteries are the most stable. Okay, so let's look at the properties of batteries. Lightweight. Now, that might make a difference if you're putting them in airplanes. If you're putting them in a wing generator system, then weight is a factor because you have to ship them, etc. And by the way, in shipping, the gel batteries are not a hazard. They're not considered a hazard. Lithium-ion batteries, if you ship a lithium-ion battery, you have to state that you're shipping lithium-ion batteries because everybody is cautious of these now. And this boat fire is just another example. And, of course, there were other issues there where the staff was supposed to be on guard 24/7 because they had clients sleeping down below deck. And anyway, that's a whole other issue. But the cause of the fire being a charging cell phone. Okay, so weight is a factor. How much does this thing weigh? And, of course, in a cell phone, having a lead-acid battery is not a good idea. You want a dry battery of some kind. There are other dry battery technologies that are coming out and trying to get a foothold in the marketplace. Okay, so weight is one of the main factors. And as I said, with the wing generator, weight is not an issue. Okay. The issue with airplanes, for example, is that electrons don't weigh much. I mean, what you're doing here is you're separating electrons from the nuclei of atoms, from the orbital shell of an atom, and you're separating them. That's basically a battery, and you can call it a capacitor. You can call it a battery. There's chemical storage of energy, etc. But the electrons themselves do not weigh much. It's the physical system for separating electrons from their parent atom and then allowing them to recombine across an interface. So you want a very high internal resistance in a battery. And that's why when like a little teeny short in a lithium ion battery starts, okay, it breaks down, that causes current to flow, which breaks down more. It's a cascading effect, and then before you know it, the entire energy of the battery is cascading through that one little spot, and it starts a fire. So having a system that prevents that type of internal destruction is important. So the reliability. Okay, next property of batteries is energy density. There again, lithium ion is very good energy density. Now, in other words, how much energy does it store per unit weight? And now one of the other comparisons is to use your battery versus petroleum, like gasoline or diesel fuel. And to date, they're starting to get energy densities that can compete with petroleum products, which is excellent. And so I think, by the way, that I think they're going to solve these lithium ion issues. when you start mass producing that many things, it's just, you're going to have problems. And I suspect that with the wing generator, I'm going to have problems. We know we're going to have problems in the future, you know, with certain things. And so we're going to have to go out and cure them. And like the automobile, I remember as a kid, we couldn't go on a 300-mile trip without having a flat tire. Okay, well, then they came along with better rubber for tires. And now you can go, you know, the lifetime of a tire without ever having a flat tire. If you have a flat tire, it's a very unusual experience. It's because something hit the tire, and that's just an example. So I suspect that the lithium-ion systems will be, they'll figure out how to overcome the problems they're having. But energy density is one of the tickets, one of the factors. How much energy is being stored in that per unit weight? Now, the transfer rate of charging and discharging. How fast can you charge the battery? How fast can you discharge the battery? How fast can you get the energy back out? And what's the cost? For example, most batteries, you can charge what they call trickle charge. And if you take a very long time to charge the battery, the amount of heat generated is very low because the currents are low, even though they're additive. But on discharging a battery, the same issue. If you discharge a battery very quickly, then the currents are higher. You're going to get a lot more heat out of the discharge and therefore waste energy. So that's wasted energy. If you're charging a battery creating heat and not just charging the battery, then that's a loss. That's energy loss. It takes energy to create that heat. And if you're discharging a battery, the same issue. And so in a lot of cases, this is one of the things. If you want to replace an automobile gas tank with a lithium-ion battery, then to fill up a gas tank is 5 minutes. You put the pump handle in the car, 5 minutes, you got the car full, you drive away, fully loaded, ready to go again. Okay, but what about a lithium-ion battery? If you charge it very quickly, you run the risk of fire, overheating, and you're wasting a lot of energy on heat. So the thing that most people will do is they will trickle charge their car when they get it home at night. They put on a charger. And by the way, I sell electric car charging stations with the wing generators. That's a product that I have in the product line. Okay, so transfer rate of energy charging and discharging is another factor in batteries. And as I go through these, I'll talk about the gel batteries doing much better than, say, the liquid acid batteries, the typical deep cycle battery that uses sulfur acid liquid. Gel batteries are much better because they're closed. There's no maintenance. You don't have a little thing you got to take off and pour liquid in. And where you pour liquid in a liquid acid battery, you dissolve the acid and you make it less, you actually reduce the effectiveness of the battery. The issue of stored energy and internal destruction. Then I'll give you an example of a product that was developed and is saving tremendous amount of energy today. It's called the LED light bulb. So what happens, also the old fluorescent light bulbs were very similar in that they did not generate a lot of heat. Fluorescent light bulbs, you can still buy a variety of fluorescent light bulb. They look like a little pigtail, squirrely pigtail light. And now LEDs are taking over. But what a guy realized was that on the old incandescent light bulbs, 95% of the energy produced went off as infrared heat. It did not produce visible light. So 95% of the energy that went into an incandescent light bulb was not usable light. So this guy was very intelligent. He put a phosphate coating or a phosphorus coating on the element, took that infrared radiation and converted it into visible light with just a coating. And so that's where the LED light bulbs came from. and this was done with a basically a transistor type of element, thus the LED light bulb. So anyway, that's very interesting. But what he did was he solved the energy loss problem. And imagine this, back in the old days, the incandescent light days, and I've talked about this relative to the wing generator. The wing generator does not have to duplicate the amount of energy expended in a coal or nuclear power plant. It only has to duplicate 80%. I'm sorry, it only has to duplicate 20%, because 80% of the energy produced in a nuclear or coal power plant goes up as heat into the atmosphere. Only about 20% of it, even though the perfect Carnot cycle is up in the 30% range, the actual percentage after you get rid of other losses, like after you account for other losses like line loss and other losses, you're getting about 20% of that energy from what you're burning, the coal or nuclear. With the wing generator, I don't have that problem. All I have to do is produce 20% of the coal energy or the nuclear energy, and I can supply the energy necessary to run the load. But with the old incandescent light bulbs, imagine that you burned a carload of coal. 20% of that actually went to electricity, then only 5% of that went to light. Look at how horrifically inefficient that is. Okay, so other factors in a battery is the number of cycles that you can cycle a battery, charge it and discharge it, and there again, gel batteries are great. But with the wing generator, you're not discharging the batteries completely. They're a buffer. The point is not to discharge your batteries. The point is that with the wind, you have wind in a good wind area. You have wind almost 24/7. So the wing generator is producing energy. The batteries are simply a buffer, and also to stabilize the voltage that comes out of the inverters that power your equipment. The reliability and then maintainability. And by far in a way, the gel batteries are far better maintainability than a liquid acid battery. And in terms of their safety, gel batteries are extremely safe. And so ultimately, that's what I use. I use basically like I won't go into details about the specifics. They're specific to every individual user when we model the systems for individuals. But that's why I use gel batteries. I don't use lithium ion. Maybe someday I will if their reliability becomes better. But in this day and age, I don't use lithium ion. And I will not for a very long time until they have proven themselves in the industry. Once again, go to the webpage. My water filter's on sale, 15% off, free shipping, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.